We gather here on a wild and windy Sunday morning in London, capital city of the United Kingdom, one of 196 countries of the world, part of a world population of 7.3 billion people, sharing our planet Earth home with some 8.7 million different species of other living beings. We are truly not alone. Yet we are unique, each and every one of us bringing our own particular version to this human life story, to this time and to this place. And so I welcome you, one and all, to Essex Church, the spiritual home of this gathered community of Kensington Unitarians. Ours is a community that celebrates diversity, that encourages independence of thought, and supports us all in being truly ourselves. Here we remind one another of our interdependence. We remind one another that our journeys of life offer much more when travelled in the companionship of others. So let's take a moment, a conscious breath, and acknowledge our arrival here today. Our choosing to spend time together, our yearning for times of calm and reflection, time to ponder upon the living of our lives, a time perhaps to wrestle with the deep issues of our time, and to strengthen our sense of connectedness with that which is greater than ourselves. Today's service explores and celebrates our relationship with the earth on which we live. And some of us will be joining the People's March for Climate Change after the service. And so today our chalice is lit for our beautiful, spinning, blue, green earth.
Our home.
We light this chalice.
For all the people of the world.
We light this flame.
For all of the creatures of the earth and the water and the skies.
And we say thank you this day.
Thank you. This reading is on your rather small, so ask if you'd like a larger copy of this sometime. I've had a version of this reading for years, and I still really clearly remember the effect it had on me when I first heard it. It was helped by the picture that accompanied it, and I can't find the picture now. The picture showed a small group of people, just like you and me, standing in an English field, staring in some amazement at a small ball that was floating in front of them. And when you looked closely at the ball, you realised it was the planet Earth, with all its bumps and blue-green bits. The picture made me laugh because the people looked so sweet and funny. And then the reading made me think long and hard about all that I so often take for granted. So see how this resonates with you this morning. If the Earth were only a few feet in diameter, floating a few feet above a field somewhere, people would come from everywhere to marvel at it. People would walk around it, marvelling at its big pools of water, its little pools, and the water flowing between. People would marvel at the bumps on it and the holes in it. They would marvel at the very thin layer of gas surrounding it and the water suspended in the gas. The people would marvel at all the creatures walking around the surface of the ball and at the creatures in the water. The people would declare it as sacred because it was the only one, and they would protect it so that it would not be hurt. The ball would be the greatest wonder known, and people would come to pray to it to be healed, to gain knowledge, to know beauty, and to wonder how it could be. People would love it and defend it with their lives because they would somehow know that their lives would be nothing without it, if the earth were only a few feet in diameter. Thank you to Joe Miller, who apparently wrote those words. And that leads us into a time of prayer and reflection. This is Advent time, beginning today. Advent, a time of waiting, a time of preparation, a time perhaps to consider what matters most to us. So let's join together in that spirit of prayer and reflection, as I call on the Spirit of life and love to be with us now in this, our time of worship. We are moving into the dark time of the year, when nights are long and days are short. May we find our ways to adapt to this changing season and to accept the darkness. May we keep bringing ourselves back to the spiritual values of this time, to the promise and the responsibility that belonging to a world community brings. In the midst of our relative plenty, let's also strive to remember those who have little. And in that remembering, we commit ourselves to creating a fairer world for all. In dark times, it may be easy to lose our way. So I invite you in these few moments of silence to think of issues perhaps in your own lives where we're unsure what to do next, where greater clarity would help us understand what is required of us, or maybe where we might seek new directions. May we become ever more thoughtful consumers here on planet Earth and do what we can to be part of ways forward rather than adding to the imbalances of our world. And so in this further moment of shared stillness, let's each of us direct our thoughts and prayers to places and people, situations perhaps we know to be in need. Divine light, shine down on this beautiful and troubled earth. Bring light to where it is needed, that all this day may know something of peace and something of beauty and something of love. Amen. Some say it's unfair, this world, particularly when people like Anthony get all the best parts. So today he's going to be the Dalai Lama, I ask you. How good a part is that? The Dalai Lama wrote the words we're going to hear as an introduction to a book that perhaps some of you know. It's called Coming Back to Life, Practices to Reconnect Our Lives and Our World, written by Joanna Macy and Molly Young Brown.
Although it is increasingly evident how interdependent we are in virtually every aspect of our lives, this seems to make little difference to the way we think about ourselves in relation to our fellow beings and our environment. We live at a time when human actions have developed a creative and destructive power that has become global in scope. And yet we fail to cultivate a corresponding sense of responsibility. Most of us are concerned only about people and property that are directly related to us. We naturally try to protect our family and friends from danger. Similarly, most people will struggle to defend their homes and land against destruction, whether the threat comes from enemies or natural disasters such as fire or flooding.
We take the existence of clean air and water, the continued growth of crops and availability of raw materials for granted. We know that these resources are finite, but because we think only of our own demands, we behave as if they are not. Our limited and self-centered attitudes fulfill neither the needs of our time nor the potential of which we are capable.
Today, while many people grapple with misery and alienation, we are faced with global problems such as poverty, overpopulation, and the destruction of the environment. These are problems we have to address together. No single community or nation can expect to solve them on its own. This indicates how small and interdependent our world has become. In ancient times, each village was more or less self-sufficient and independent. There was neither the need nor the expectation of cooperation with others outside the village. You survived by doing everything yourself. The situation now has completely changed. It is no longer appropriate to think only in terms of even my nation or my country, let alone my village. If we are to overcome the problems we face, we need what I have called a sense of universal responsibility rooted in love and kindness for our human brothers and sisters.
It's such a simple yet profound message, isn't it? If we are to overcome the problems we face, we need what I have called a sense of universal responsibility rooted in love and kindness for our human brothers and sisters. Words from the Dalai Lama. Jonathan Sacks, one-time chief rabbi, highly regarded worker for interfaith relations. Jonathan Sacks writes, "I once asked Prince Hassan of Jordan, shortly after the assassination of Israel's Prime Minister, Yitzhak Rabin, whether there was anything that might bring Israelis and Palestinians, Jews and Muslims together. Was there a bridge over the abyss? He answered, our shared tears, our history of suffering. That, writes Jonathan Sacks, was a wise remark. There are 6,000 languages spoken today, but there is only one that is truly universal, the language of tears. There is much to cry about in our world today, and I do not need to add to your sorrows by listing the issues that are of concern. You can just log them in your own head. But as we've already mentioned, straight after today's service, a group of us are joining the People's March on Climate Change, intended to raise everyone's awareness that the United Nations are holding their 21st conference on climate change starting tomorrow in Paris. That in itself feels quite poignant, doesn't it? In the midst of concerns about terrorist attacks and the possibility of further intervention by Western powers in Syria and Iraq, there will be some who say it's the wrong time to be focusing on environmental issues. But I'd say it's just the right time. In difficult times, our focus can often be out there, looking at the problems outside us. And such a viewpoint can have us feel powerless. But the environment is not, in my view, an out there issue. It's here, now, and with us. Because the planet Earth is our home, truly the ground of our being. Our bodies are made, as you know, from the very elements that form this planet, the chemical elements that form the air and the earth and the water on which we depend. I've had such pleasure this week just getting juicy little facts about how many people there are on the planet and da-da-da. So here's some more facts for you. Each of us is born with 50 trillion cells. That's quite a lot. They appear new, but actually they're made up of atoms that have been circulating in the universe for billions of years. Every atom in our bodies was once made in the blazing heat of temperatures a million times hotter than molten rock as the stars were formed. We are indeed made of stars. And what about our universe? Our planet Earth is a tiny part of our galaxy, the Milky Way, that just occasionally we can glimpse on a dark night. And the Milky Way is one of perhaps 100,000 million other galaxies. And we have no idea if life might exist in other solar systems, but the chance of life developing here on Earth seems pretty remarkable, doesn't it? Dependent as we are on a particular balance of gases and the fact that we have rain and a few inches of topsoil allowing our foodstuffs to grow. It's all quite remarkable and it's all quite fragile. And it's the changes, of course, in greenhouse gas levels that have led to 2015 being the warmest year on record, according to the United Nations. Geologists use a system of ages of the Earth's existence, and some now refer to our current era as the Anthropocene, the era in which human activities have had a noticeable effect on our environment. This has both a scientific and a spiritual relevance, I believe, because if we humans now have the ability to shape and to alter the Earth's environment, then we have, as the Dalai Lama said, a responsibility too, to be careful co-creators of this planet. This, of course, is the view of eco-spirituality groups and deep ecologists like Thomas Berry and Satish Kumar, who writes, "The contemporary environmental movement in the main follows the path of empirical science, rational thinking, data collection and external action. And this, of course, is good as far as it goes. But it doesn't go far enough. We need to include care of the soul as part of the care of the planet." I've been reading some work by Llewellyn Vaughan Lee, who's a Sufi teacher and writer this week, who's particularly interested in ecology and spirituality. And he describes deep ecology as considering the ecosystem as a living whole of which humanity is only one part. In this complex web of interrelationships, all species are dependent on one another, and it is this organic pattern that needs to be sustained. Deep ecology maintains that the idea of endless economic growth is unsustainable, and that business as usual will destroy the beauty and the diversity of our world. We are called to find new economic models and ways of living. Way back in 2008, 45 members of this congregation helped me complete my master's degree by taking part in a survey of believing and belonging in this Unitarian congregation. For any of you who have got insomnia issues, there is a copy of my dissertation which can be found in the resources and publications section of our Kensington Unitarians website. I'm mentioning this particularly for our podcast listeners today. Light reading for one and all around the world. But really, I mean, I'm fascinated by these sorts of issues, so really, I loved every minute of it. And I had enough information in those questionnaires to write several books, because people were saying where they gained their spiritual nourishment from. And I tried not to be disappointed when I read again and again and again that, lo and behold, it was not Sunday mornings here with me, you know, our lovely gathered community. No, it was out on country walks and in wilderness and in gardens and communing with the birds, pottering in urban gardens or going out for a bike ride or a swim in wild waters. They were the ways that people in this congregation felt they gained their particular spiritual nourishment. I wonder if any of that resonates with you today. One of the deep ecology movement's key messages is reconnection with the earth, which is our home, and indeed the essence of our being. Our modern lives and the enormity of the world's issues can lead to disconnection, to feelings of powerlessness or apathy. But we here, I think, can help one another to reconnect and to celebrate our planet. We are connected by one language, the language of tears, said Princess Anne of Jordan. We're also connected by our one shared home, our planet Earth. I wonder what we can learn from her. And in that spirit, I'm going to invite you now to join in a shared responsive reading, which comes from the Uta prayer, Earth Teachers. It's got paler lines and darker lines, and I invite you to choose a lighter or a darker colour to read a responsive reading, one to another. Earth, teach us stillness, as the grasses are stilled with light. Earth, teach us suffering, as old stones suffer with memory. Earth, teach us humility,
as the blossoms are humble with beginning.
Earth, teach us caring,
as the mother.
Earth, teach us courage, as the tree which stands all alone. Earth, teach us limitation, as the ant which crawls on the ground. Earth, teach us freedom, as the eagle which soars in the sky. Earth, teach us resignation, as the leaves which fall in the autumn. Earth, teach us regeneration, as the seed which rises in the spring. Earth, teach us to forget ourselves, as melted snow forgets its life. Earth, teach us to remember kindness, as dry fields weep for the joy of rain. Amen. So may we go peacefully. May we go gently with ourselves and others. May we take care of our precious lives and our precious world, stopping from time to time in wonder and amazement and giving thanks. Amen. Go well and blessed be.